Today's episode is sponsored by the new film, If, out in theaters on May 17th. From writer and director John Krasinski comes the story of Bee, a curious young girl with the power to see everyone's imaginary friends, or ifs, and her quest to reunite forgotten ifs with their kids. Audiences of all ages will know and love the cast, which includes the likes of Steve Carell, Maya Rudolph, and the late, great Louis Gossett Jr. After watching the trailer, I am so excited to see all the ways kids imagine their ifs. Celebrate the magic of imagination and take the whole family to the movies to see If, out in theaters on May 17th. Today's episode is sponsored by Greenlight. Did you know that 27 states don't require a personal finance course for students, even though teens score an average of 64% on the National Financial Literacy Test? Let's make a difference. Our friends at Million Bazillion and Greenlight are hitting the road, visiting schools to teach important lessons on financial literacy. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live and interactive. Million Bazillion Live is in partnership with Greenlight, the money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That's greenlight.com/million.
You're listening to Brains On, where we're serious about being curious. If you were shrunk down to the size of an ant, what would you do?
I would build anthills and sting somebody because I'm a fire ant.
I would sneak around on people.
If I were an ant, I would eat a giant pizza at my favorite restaurant.
If I could shrink down to the size of an ant, I would explore my backyard, collect mica, climb trees that have become infinitely tall, and hard-boil termite eggs.
If I was an ant, I would eat everybody's ice cream because they wouldn't see me.
You're listening to Brains On. Those voices you just heard were Judah from St. Paul, Millie in Brandon, Florida, Michele and Rachelle in London, Evan from Herndon, Virginia, and Sabine from Seattle. As you might have guessed, today's show is all about ants. With me to explore the topic is 12-year-old Grayson Domidian from Lancaster, Kentucky. Hello, Grayson.
Hi.
So you are an insect enthusiast. What do you think you would do if you were the size of an ant?
I would probably run into a corner so no one could step on me.
It's very smart. And I hear that you started a bug club. Can you tell me about it?
Recently, we've been learning about ants. And we've been learning about just the different parts of ants, like just the three different parts, the abdomens and things like that.
And do you have actual insects there that you can look at?
We have some. I have a lot. A lot of the ones I have are pinned, but we do have alive bugs.
So when you say you have pinned insects, can you tell me what that means?
So it sounds really mean, but it's really not. But we have cases, and we just... For butterflies, we spread out their wings, and they get sort of compressed, but we pin them, and then they we put a label in the pin so they can see what the name of it is and where it was found and who found it and things like that.
So these insects are no longer alive?
No.
Okay. And I hear that you won first place with your insect collection.
I did, at the Kentucky State Fair.
Very cool. So can you just describe that award-winning collection for us?
Well, it had 111 species of insects. I had 11 orders.
What's an order?
It's like different species or families. So like Hymenoptera, that is the order of the ant. That's what the ant order is in. So
it's sort of like a grouping of different kinds of insects.
Yes. So there's different types of ants. In Kentucky, we have cow killers. They have a really powerful sting. And there's just regular black ants. There's fire ants and things like that. They're all in that Hymenoptera. They're in that one order.
Very cool. And so why do people make these collections of insects?
Some people, I hope that not a lot of people do this, but some people do it for money because you do win money. But catching them is fun, you know. I like it just because you can see they're not really scary. When people get scared of them, scared of spiders or things like that, they're not that scary. So,
well, Grayson, you are obviously a great candidate to help us with today's show. Ants have inspired many of the questions sent to us by Brains On listeners.
like this one from Casey.
Hi, my name is Casey. I live in Porter Ranch, California. And my question is, why do ants march in a straight line?
To help us answer this question, we've invited an esteemed journalist to join us.
She's a correspondent for ANN, the Ant News Network. She's reported from 6 continents, and she recently won the prestigious Formica Award for Investigative Ant Journalism. Please welcome our guest. You just want me to call you an ant?
Yeah, thanks. We're not big on individual names at the Ant News Network. It's really about the colony. Pleasure to meet you, humans.
Nice to meet you.
And you can call us Molly and Grayson. We are big on names here at Brains On.
Sure. Now, your question about how we ants walk is one I've encountered many times since I began as a young larval reporter, which was actually just a few months ago. Our lifespans are very short. Anyway.
Hey, what's going on here?
Oh, hi, ant. I'm doing an interview.
Oh, cool.
As I was saying, the reason ants seem to walk in a straight line is that we're actually following a scent trail left by another ant. In fact, the line doesn't have to be straight at all. It can be curvy or squiggly or bend around corners. We're just following the scent.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Ant's doing an interview.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, she's doing so great so far.
Thanks, guys. When an ant first starts walking around, it's pretty much moving at random. Let's say we're looking for food.
I love food.
Me too.
Hey, are you guys talking about food? Yes, I love food too.
Hey, ant. Food is delightful. So an ant will find a food source and leave a trail of a special chemical known as a pheromone. Other ants detect the pheromone trail and find their way to the food, too.
Hey, guys.
We're here.
Hey.
That's how all these ants found their way to your studio, by the way. I left a trail of pheromones to demonstrate my point.
Okay. Well, we're happy to have you. All of you.
So all the ants tracking the path of pheromones look like they're walking in a straight line, but in reality, they're just following the scents left behind other ants?
Exactly.
So the nose knows, eh?
Well, we don't have a nose, per se. We smell with our antennae. They're incredibly sensitive to these chemical trails.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Hey.
Well, thanks so much for being here today, Ant.
Anytime, Molly. For ANN, this is Ant, signing off.
You're on Brains On, not ANN?
Oh, right. Brains On.
Who's leaving the crumbs?
Brains On!
Well, now that we've got that straight, let's move on.
Rory from Olympia, Washington, wrote in with this question.
Hello, Brains On. My question is, what do ants do to help the earth?
Well, ants are really important. They dig in the ground and bring air into the soil.
That's Professor Deborah Gordon.
She's a professor of biology at Stanford University. She has a lab dedicated to the study of ants.
They have a lot of different kinds of relationships with many different kinds of plants. Plants make a home for the ant, and the ants live in there and defend the plant against other creatures that want to eat the plant. They're really important in the ecology of almost every kind of habitat on Earth.
So what made you decide to study ants?
I was interested in systems that work without anybody in charge. And an ant colony is a great example because an ant colony consists of a lot of sterile workers. Those are the ants you see walking around. And one or more reproductive females. And even though we call them the queens, they're not in charge. They don't tell anybody what to do. They don't give any instructions. In fact, in an ant colony, no ant gives any other ant instructions. And so it's a really interesting question. How do they ever figure out how to get anything done?
So how do they know what to do?
Each ant just uses the rate at which it meets other ants or it meets chemicals put down by other ants. And just that very simple flow of interactions tells it what to do. So no ant understands the big plan for what everybody's doing, and no ant knows why it's doing what it's doing. And that's what's so interesting, that the whole system still works really well.
How does an ant communicate with each other?
Well, most ants can't see. So the first thing you need to know about ants is there's more than 14,000 different kinds. And they're probably all different in some ways, although they all live in colonies. But Pretty much most ants can't see very well. There are a few kinds that can, but mostly they work by smell, and they smell with their antennae. So when one ant touches another ant with its antennae, it's smelling it. So if you start watching ants, you'll see them approach each other and touch each other with their antennae. And it turns out that they're smelling this layer, kind of grease that they have on their bodies. And that grease has a smell that tells the other ant what job it's been doing and whether it belongs to the same colony. And they also put out chemicals from glands in their body that have a smell. The most famous kind is called trail pheromone, and that's a chemical that one ant puts down on the ground where it's walking. And then another ant that comes along tends to be attracted to that smell, and so it goes in the direction of the smell. So those two different kinds of contact based on smell, when they touch antennae or when they smell a chemical that the other one just put down, are mostly what ants use to communicate. One of the things we can learn from ants is about collective search. So collective search is the problem of how a lot of different individuals, without telling each other very much, can work together to find anything in a space without a plan. So that's how ants do it. So you can imagine that you had a group of people who knew that there was something really valuable, like a diamond ring lost on a football field. And suppose they all had to just go out blindfolded without any plan and try and find this diamond ring. Well, the only information they would really have about what everybody else is doing is how often they bump into each other. So if a lot of them end up clustered in one place looking for the ring all in the same place, they're going to end up bumping into each other. And that's what ants do. They just use the rate at which they meet, and it's a measure of how many other ants are searching that same area. And so if they don't meet anybody very often, they know they have to walk in a straighter line, or they might not know it, but they do walk in a straighter line, and that way they cover more ground. But if they meet a lot of other ants, then they can be very, very careful searching right around right where they are, because there'll be another ant nearby searching over there.
I know a lot of our listeners spend a lot of time looking at ants in their backyards and observing them. Is there a way that those observations could help you with your research?
Yes. Because of an experiment that we did on the International Space Station, looking at how ants search collectively in microgravity, we set up a way for anybody to try it. We'd love for kids to try it. The Ant Colony Search website explains how to do the experiment, and you can enter the data so that we can soon post the results on lots of different species. And I think in this way, if lots of people try it with different species, we might learn about ways that ants search that we've never even thought of.
Thank you, Professor Gordon, for this interview today.
Thanks to you, too. Bye.
Professor Gordon says that collective search can be helpful in all sorts of human activity. Data can move more efficiently across the internet. Search robots can become better at finding their way. It could even help us understand how cancer cells spread. Thanks, ants. We have a link to Professor Gordon's Ant Colony Search Project in the Brains On newsletter. Just head over to brainson.org and click on the link to sign up.
Ant
News
Network.
Hello, this is Ant with the Ant News Network. We interrupt this program for a special announcement. Did you know some species of ant can build bridges using just their bodies? Let's say a group of army ants needs to cross a gap to get some food, usually another insect. Some ants will start stretching out from the edge of the cliff. More and more ants will join in and link bodies until they form a living bridge. Then other ants can simply walk across to their feast. Do we mind being walked on? Not at all! We ants like to say teamwork makes the dream work, and that dream is usually delicious food. This is Ant, signing off for ANN.
Okay, thanks, Ant. But this isn't ANN. You're on Brains On, and your interview is over, so you can, leave now, okay? Anyway, Grayson, let's go back to our regularly scheduled programming. It's time for the mystery sound.
Mystery sound.
Here it is.
Any guesses?
It sounds like a vehicle or something. But I think it...
A vehicle of some sort?
I think it maybe the ants talking to each other.
Ooh, I like that. That is an excellent guess. We're going to be back with the answer in just a bit.
If I was the size of an ant, could I see a water bear or maybe even cling on to a cat's hair?
I would protect others from things that would like to eat us.
I would color with tiny pieces of crayon, and I would eat tiny little crumbs.
I would sneak food from the pantry when people aren't looking.
If I were as small as an ant, I'd find big houses or mansions to explore and maybe make a nest somewhere secret where humans would not know about.
Those voices came from Sam in Austin, Ollie in Birmingham, Aurelia from Victoria, British Columbia, and Isaiah and Charlie from Vancouver, Washington. Brains On listeners, we're working on an episode all about elevators, and we have a question for you about the future of elevators. What feature would you most like to see in an elevator? Like, where would you want it to be able to go? Or what should it be able to do? Send your answer to hello@brainson.org. You can also send your questions, mystery sounds, and drawings to that same email address. In fact, we'd love to see your ideas of what the Ant News Network team looks like. A drawing of an ant in a sports coat at a news desk would make my day. Now, let's give a shout out to all the awesome kids who keep this show going with their energy and ideas. It's time for the Brains Honor Roll. If you've written to us, we will get to you, we promise, but we're hearing from so many of you that there's a bit of a wait. So thank you for your patience. Liliana from LA, Sloan from North Vancouver, Thor from Loomis, California, Alexander from Apex, North Carolina, Neve from LA, Will from Fairfield, Connecticut, Max and Oliver from Boise, Magnus from Minneapolis, Gavin, Declan, and Kira from Columbia, Connecticut, Madeline, Jacob, and Oliver from Toronto, Timmy and Lexa from Sabinal, Texas, Emmy from Vancouver, Jacob from Ottawa, Elijah from Victorville, California, Harper and Riley from Scituate, Massachusetts, Finley from Seattle, Graham and Miles from Alameda, California, Tegan from Vienna, Virginia, Lydia, Mark, and Charlie from Decatur, Georgia, Ella and Jack from Neenock, California, Brady from Homer, Alaska, Sam from Washington, D.C., Stella from Victoria, British Columbia, Elijah and Nate from Redding, California, Ayers from Arlington, Massachusetts, Molly from L.A., Anish from Boyds, Maryland, Vito from Manila, Joni and Stella from San Francisco, Jackson and Banner from England, Margot from Raleigh, North Carolina, Samuel from Unionville, Ontario, Felix from Pittsburgh, Benedetto from Chicago, Dino and Enzo from White Bear Township, Minnesota, Finn and June from Cheltenham, England, Jameson from St. Louis, Amelie and Lucien from Skokie, Illinois, and Donovan from La Mesa, California. Did you know that Brains On has a newsletter? It's true. And we've just supercharged it with ways to keep this episode going after you listen. Go to brainson.org to sign up. Books, conversation starters, and videos. And speaking of videos, if you sign up for the newsletter, you'll be the first to see the Ant News Network in action. We made a video. Click on the newsletter link at brainson.org. Thanks.
You're listening to Brains On. I'm Grayson Amidian.
And I'm Molly Bloom.
And I'm an ant with another update from the ANN.
Ant
News
Network.
Reports show that most ants are female. This includes the queen, duh. But also the worker ants and the soldier ants. Male ants are in short supply and really only have one main job. They occasionally mate with the queen to help produce more ant colonies. Also, did you know ants don't have lungs? Nah, we just breathe through tiny holes in our sides called spiracles. Noses and lungs are overrated anyway. Back to you, human. I mean, Molly.
How did that ant get on my microphone?
Molly, there are lots of ants on your microphone. Mine too.
Oh, yeah. Try not to be grossed out, but I guess it's cool that the ANN ants keep dropping in with all these ant facts. That's useful. Anyway, Grayson, human co-host, have you ever seen ants attack something?
I've actually never seen that happen. I've seen, bees attack things, but I've never seen ants.
Well, actually, ants can be quite aggressive. And to learn more about that, we're joined by a war correspondent from our friends at the Ant News Network, Sandin Totten? Like Brains On producer Sandin Totten?
Hey, Molly. Hey, Grayson.
Hey.
Since when do you work for the Ant News Network?
you know, I've been moonlighting. It turns out the ANN pays really well. I mean, it's all in sugar, but, you know, still, it's good sugar.
So I've heard the term army ants, but do ants really have wars?
Do they ever, Grayson? Let me tell you. First of all, ants can fight over food and territories and homes, and they can have epic battles. Even though there may only be a fraction of the colony fighting at any given time, these battles can be brutal. These ant soldiers will risk life and limb in service of the colony, many dying bravely in combat.
Oh, Delta Queen, I love her.
Can't you hear the sounds of the ant war ringing through the land? Okay, well, we can't really hear the wars because they're tiny, but, you know, you get the idea.
Well, Sandin, we just talked about how ants are self-organizing. Is that how they fight, too?
Exactly. There aren't, like, ant generals and ant lieutenants calling the shots. That would be ridiculous. Wars usually break out when two different colonies run into each other as one is moving or expanding its territory.
So they just start wars when they bump into each other at random?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. You see, some ant species will have scouts that kind of go out on their own. And if they stumble across enemies, they'll run back to the nest, leaving a trail of these pheromones we talked about behind them so other ants can find the fight. Other types of ants, they just travel in big gangs, and when they come across enemies, they swarm and attack.
I've heard ants can use some pretty extreme tactics when they fight. Like, don't some ants tear their enemies apart?
Yeah, it's kind of gruesome. That's not uncommon for some species, but that's only the start of ant wars, Molly. Some ants have powerful jaws that can slice their enemies. Others, they use stingers. Some even use weapons, sort of. There's a species called Dorymyrmex bicolor, or the pyramid ant, and it will actually drop rocks into the entrance of its enemy's nest to trap them.
That's actually really clever.
Yeah, and if you want extreme, there's a species of ant in Malaysia that will sometimes explode in battle, spreading a corrosive glue all over its enemy. The ant dies doing this, but it can do serious damage to foes as well.
Wow, that is gruesome. I almost feel bad for the ants.
Yeah, I'll just say, I wouldn't want to fight an army of ants.
Well, moving on.
Wait, I was not done. There's a lot more about ant attacks I want to talk about. So, for instance, there's this ant, the southern wood ant. It can spray a substance called formic acid from its abdomen. It uses this against attackers, and apparently the stuff kind of smells like vinegar.
Gross, but I could see that being effective.
Yeah, and fire ants, they can actually inject their enemies with a toxic venom. That's why people think their stings feel like fire. Ouch. Then there's the raspberry crazy ant that can protect itself from this venom.
Wait, raspberry crazy ant? That's the name?
Yeah, it's called the crazy ant because it does these kind of fast, erratic movements. And it was discovered first in Texas by a guy named Tom Raspberry. No joke. So that's how it got the name. Great name. The raspberry crazy ants, they can excrete a substance that actually protects them from the fire ant's venom. And this has helped them take over large parts of the Southwest formerly ruled by the fire ants.
So we're talking about fights between different species of ants, right?
Yeah, sometimes that's the case. But, you know, sometimes, Molly, it's the same species fighting, just different colonies of that species, sort of like ants from different families fighting each other.
That sounds confusing. I mean, if they are the same species, don't they all look alike? I mean, how do they tell who's on which side?
The same way you tell if milk is bad, you sniff. Every ant colony has its own distinct odor. Like, take this ant here.
Hello.
And this ant.
Howdy.
They're from the same colony, and watch when I put them together.
I never met you, but I like you already. Hello, new BFF.
But then I take this other ant here.
Hiya.
She's from a different colony. Watch what happens when I drop her in with the other two.
Oh, look, a new friend. Wait a minute. You're not one of us.
Death to the outsider!
Get him! Rip him apart!
There you have it. An ant's scent is sort of like its uniform. That's how they identify their friends and their foes.
Thanks for the info, Sandin.
No problem. For the Ant News Network, I'm Sandin Totten, signing off.
I guess we need to start paying out sugar bonuses. I do not want to lose Sandin to the competition.
I hear ANN also provides free housing for all its staff. It's deep underground with no windows, but still.
Really? Huh. I wonder if they're looking for podcast hosts. For now, let's just go back to the mystery sound. Here it is one more time. Any new guesses?
Okay, it sounds like a razor scooter that's been held up and the wheel is just turning.
Oh, that is a great guess. I know exactly what you're talking about. Here with the answer is Melanie Moses.
That was the sound of a group of swarmy robots collectively searching for cubes that we've placed out in the environment.
So you were close. It was something mechanical moving around.
I kind of thought it might be ants, like, talking to each other, but yeah, it makes sense now.
Well, ants are connected to this mystery sound. Melanie teaches computer science at the University of New Mexico. She also runs the NASA Swarmathon. It's a challenge where students from around the United States program swarms of robots called swarmies to pick up resources as though they were on other planets.
The swarmies are robots that are about a foot long. They have little grippers out in the front that look a little bit like the mandibles, the jaws of an ant, and they use those to pick up blocks that we place for them. They have four wheels, a camera, and it might look just a little bit like a tiny Mars rover. A swarmie is a robot that we designed here at the University of New Mexico along with our partners at NASA. It's an autonomous robot. And it's different from other robots because it's designed to cooperate with teammates. The original inspiration for the swarmies were seed harvester ants, where all of the robots are identical, and they search for little cubes that we scatter in the environment and collect them together. What's interesting about these robots is there's no one operating them. There's only code running on the computer that our students have written. So they can communicate with each other, but they don't actually have a human operator that tells them what to do. They have to be programmed to make their own decisions based on what they encounter in the world. In the 2020s, there's a Journey to Mars, which is NASA's effort to land the first astronauts on Mars. Before they send astronauts, those astronauts are going to need a lot of resources when they arrive. They're going to need water and oxygen and fuel to get back home, building materials. And so NASA has a project to send robots, and they're investigating whether swarms of robots are an appropriate way to do this, basically to gather resources from the Martian surface and collect them in places that that astronauts could use them.
This year's NASA Swarmathon takes place April 18th through the 20th. You can see it live at the Kennedy Space Center or stream it on their site, nasaswarmathon.com.
Ant.
News.
Network.
Hi, Ant here, breaking into this show for an ant farm update. And no, I'm not talking about those plastic boxes humans put us in. I'm talking about the very real farming that some ants do. For example, we farm tiny insects called aphids. Us ants like to eat the sugary secretions that come out of aphids' rear ends. Don't judge. It's delicious. To keep a continuous supply of this gooey ambrosia, some species will eat the wings off aphids so they can't fly away. They'll also protect the bugs from predators and take them into ant nests to keep them out of the rain. After all, a happy aphid makes sweeter rear-end juice. Wait, that sounds gross. I mean, a well-cared-for aphid makes tastier rear-end secretions. Gah, still gross. Whatever, you know what? I'm just going to sign off. This is Ant for ANN.
And I'm Ant.
And I'm also an ant.
We ants leave a chemical trail of pheromones to help other ants find food or to let them know where to join in the fight.
We use collective behavior to get our jobs done. The queen ant isn't in control. In fact, no ant is in control.
Humans are just beginning to find uses for collective behavior. Data networks, cancer research, and robots are just a few of the emerging fields we ants can help humans better understand.
Speaking of humans, hi, Grayson and I are hosting this episode.
That's it for this episode of Brains On, brought to you by ANN, the Ant News Network.
What the? Brains On is produced by humans Mark Sanchez, Sandon Totten, and Molly Bloom.
I give up, Grayson. Let's go drink some hot cocoa while they wrap up.
Sounds good to me. It's getting pretty crowded in here.
Careful where you step.
Special thanks to Veronica Rodriguez, Amy Demidian, Sarah Gustavus, Cameron Wiley, Annie Gilbertson, Rebecca Plevin, Kristen Lepore, Kyle Stokes, Mark Hoddle,
John Lambert, Nancy Yang, Tracy Mumford, Julie Seipel, Rose Martin, Jeff Jones, Jeff Kamen, Christine Hutchins, and Lauren D.
And don't forget to send in your ideas about the future of elevators.
Right. What feature would you most like to see in an elevator? Where would you want it to be able to go? Or what should it be able to do? Personally, I'd love an elevator in the ant nest. Those tunnels are deep.
Right? Good call, Ant. Email your responses to hello@brainson.org.
And follow them on Instagram and Twitter @brains_on.
Or find them on Facebook.
If you like the show, let all the other ants, I mean humans, know.
iTunes reviews really help other humans find the show.
This has been Ant.
And an Ant for ANN, the Ant News Network.
Sorry, guys. Excuse me. Just one quick thing. Thanks for listening.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.